Welcome to The Brainstorm, a podcast and video series from ARK Invest. Tune in every week as we react to the latest in innovation and reflect on how short-term news impacts our long-term views. To learn more, visit ARK-invest.com.
ARK Investment Management, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.
Welcome to The Brainstorm, episode 66. We've got exciting topics. WeRobot 2.0, aka Tesla's earnings, with Tasha Keeney, and then Nick will dive into Anthropic and AI agents over there. Tasha, I feel like a lot of details came out that maybe people were expecting at the CyberCab event. What did you take away from Tesla's call?
Yeah, well, the stock had a strong reaction following the call, I think likely because people were pleasantly surprised by earnings, which beat expectations thanks to pretty aggressive cost reductions on the vehicle platform. They said they achieved a record cost of, it's like $35,100 per vehicle. So that's, I think, what the street was the most focused on. What we've been very focused on, of course, is autonomy. And Sam, you've been focused on, the humanoid robots further down the line. I think at the WeRobot event, and we've talked about this quite a bit internally, I felt like there was an expectation for them to reveal a lot more detail than came out. But if you look at past product releases, it wasn't, I think, too much of a difference there, the WeRobot event versus others. So, clearly they were waiting for more of an investor type event to talk about those details, or maybe strategically they want to keep more close to their chest now that they're actually close to launching. So the big news is that we found out that Tesla is actually testing a ride-hail platform right now in California and that they have plans to launch it next year. Sounds like they're going to launch it with safety drivers. Not too much of a surprise. They stated that certain states have regulation over that. My guess is California has a regulation where you need a safety driver at first, and then you need to pass some threshold of time or miles before you can pull that person out of the car. Unclear exactly what the laws are in Texas. My guess is they're more lenient. I know there are more hoops to jump through in California. But what does this mean? Well, we've been saying that for some time, even if Tesla were to take a while to solve for full autonomy, or let's say take a while to get regulatory approval for a fully autonomous taxi service, they could start a human-driven ride-hail service. And then they actually already have a better cost structure than the average Uber car in the vehicle, because we know that electric vehicles are, roughly a third of the price on maintenance and operating costs. So there's a lot of strategic tactical reasons to do so. It seems like that's the way that things are going to go in the early days anyways. And then it's just a question of when are they going to take the driver out? So we've been saying 2025, 2026, roughly 60-40 probability there. Seems like that's still in play based on the announcement. So pretty exciting.
And then I feel like other tidbits that came out, confirmation of drivetrain efficiency goal of 5.5 miles per kilowatt hour. That's pretty meaningful, especially when you pair that with battery cost declines and, in theory, what they can manufacture the CyberCab for. I think, you know, they said, was it $30,000? Less than $30,000 is what they said. You know, when we're looking at it very crudely, you know, maybe this could be as low as $15,000 to $20,000 to manufacture, still doing active work there. Any other surprises from your side, Tasha or Nick, anything the Threads folk want to point out as being fake or holes in the report?
I have one question because it relates to me personally, but I know there was news on Hardware 3 and its ability to actually use this new capability with FSD. So what's the deal there? Mm-hmm. First, we'll start there.
A little bit of history there. They've gone back and forth a bit. So we know that, you know, to date software releases tend to happen. The latest software tends to happen on Hardware 4 vehicles, and then Hardware 3 vehicles get it later, especially with the latest versions of the full self-driving software suite, specifically everything 12.5, which was a major update, and further. Then Tesla said that they were, you know, moving towards this one model approach. You know, I spoke with some people at the We Robot event, and the explanation was, okay, it's actually easier to do this with an end-to-end system. And I say one model for both Hardware 3 and Hardware 4 vehicles. At the We Robot event, Elon said, you know, he didn't want to get into the details of Hardware 3 and 4. So I had speculated, okay, it seems like it's still probable based on what we've seen that they start with Hardware 4, and it looks like that's what they're doing. So it's not too surprising. And to give you the numbers, it's like roughly 6 million cars globally, Hardware 3 and Hardware 4, like not quite, but rough, let's call it 50-50 split, really roughly. And then about like half of that 6 million is in the US. So they still have quite a few cars on the Hardware 4 platform if they want to start there. And then the plan is, again, to kind of basically, because the inference chip on Hardware 3 has different like power memory limits than Hardware 4, they have to change the model and basically compress the model a little bit to make it backwards integratable. And then Elon said, you know, if that doesn't work, then they would swap out the hardware system. And so they've been building the cars for a while now, since like the early days of Tesla making their own inference chip and switching from NVIDIA, where there's like a panel on the car that pops out that you can actually swap out that inference chip. So while it sounds, you know, complicated, they've planned for this, you know, many years ago, in case they need to do that. So, you know, if as a Hardware 3 owner, you might not be the first to sign your vehicle up for the platform. Certainly gives you, you know, some incentives to maybe use the Tesla incentives to switch over to Hardware 4 if you wanted to. I think longer term, they have enough cars on Hardware 3 where they're going to want to make it work, as I said. So I think that they'll make it work somehow. It's just a question of how.
That's right, Nick. Just use Tasha's referral code and get yourself into a new car. Also, I think pulling off of the work that Tasha's done and thinking about it, right? It's until they get full unsupervised self-driving, it's fine. They don't need to replace the vehicles. They're going to keep doing what they're doing. When they do have that capability, the market opportunity that this unlocks, right? You've got Uber and Lyft drivers paying $2 a mile. Tesla came out in their call. They said, you know, 30 to 40 cents. The work that Tasha's done suggests as low as 25 cents per mile. And so you've got a trillion miles at a dollar per mile revenue opportunity, right? At like that price point. And so if you're offering a $1 price point, you're undercutting Uber and Lyft. If you can offer that for 30 to 40 cents times a trillion, I think you have enough cash flow there to put a computer back into a old car.
Yes. And actually, so you're citing, you know, we've dimensioned the market by price point, and there's, you know, there's some market at Uber and Lyft pricing today. It's like under 200 billion roughly in market opportunity at like the $2 to $4 price point. Then there's like a big portion of the market that, you know, we've done some analysis based on how people value their time. And it kind of makes sense if you look at the average cost to drive your own vehicle in the US as well at around a dollar in Western markets. And then globally, like once you expand below a dollar, you know, then markets like China are in play. You know, China, we had it at 50 cents. It actually looks like it's closer to 30 cents per mile. Prices have come down a little bit for ride hail there. So actually the total global opportunity is over $10 trillion. And yes, the further you move below that $1 price point, which is like a big linchpin to open up this opportunity, you know, the more that market opportunity grows to be much greater than what Uber and Lyft occupy today.
We should start posting this on Threads because I can tell you that is not what they think on that platform. I would say if you were to take all of the people that were involved in Tesla Q back in 2018, 2019, they have all made their way over to Threads and they were very unhappy with the report in the way that things shaped up.
In the way that Tesla Q was on while they were on X.
I mean, I would say the general commentary from them is it's all smoke and mirrors, a lot of talk, little execution, continuing to push out dates. And, you know, the hardware 3, hardware 4, they go back and, you know, take Elon at his word from his comments many years ago and now are saying, look, he's lying or he lied and now he's trying to cover and you'll never have this capability, which is unfortunate that there's a percentage of the population that doesn't believe in the story.
Yeah, I think that, and we've talked about this before, it's really hard to predict the day when an AI breakthrough will happen. You can absolutely say that Elon's been kind of aggressive in his targets. You could also argue that like optimism or like aggression in setting those targets is what has helped Tesla achieve what they achieved today. But I would even zoom out and like, you know, every automaker said that they'd make an autonomous car by 2019. So I don't think Tesla's like alone in this overt optimism here. It's just maybe they're like a lot more public and a lot more granular with their targets, which has led to more criticism.
I think
the real question
is
like,
that's a great point, Tasha.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a huge point that people miss. It's like Tesla's just the one that hasn't quit.
But they're also the only company that's charged for it. I think that's what people on Threads would, you know, the bear argument is, yes, everyone made promises, but only one company actually took, you know, in revenue off of those promises.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I'd argue that it's like you're charging for a driver assistance feature that arguably is the best on the road. I mean, certainly like feature wise has the most. And you know, all the other automakers that offer like hands-free driving, that's all geofence. That's like certain roads. And Tesla didn't want to choose that geofence sort of confined strategy, which is what's made it, you know, arguably a difficult problem to solve. But I think it's like, you know, we believe that they'll get there in terms of like hands-free. So I think that yes, you're paying for future capability, but you're also, you know, you're paying for your car to get better overnight and for you to kind of have to put less energy in as a driver. Although, of course, you still have to pay attention today.
I know, Tasha, we didn't say we were going to discuss this, so feel free to punt on this. But with the Waymo raising money, and I don't know if you saw what Akash posted about some rumors still about the cost of those vehicles. What were you thinking when you saw that Waymo raised this $5 to $6 billion?
Well, we had heard that Alphabet was going to invest $5 billion in Waymo. So, you know, I'm unsure exactly like what the split is of internal versus external investment. You know, to scale up a vehicle platform, if what I think is happening today, and we'll see what happens in the future, it's like it looks like they purchased these vehicles from auto partners or, you know, unclear what the split is, but in order to fund that, you know, you do need billions of dollars to get to scale. Cause you know, you want like, let's say like 10,000 cars plus per city here, just to even get started. I mean, Tesla's talking about having millions of cars. So if you believe them, you're likely thinking that you want to get to that scale, sometime in like the next 5 years, let's say, in order to just compete. So it's not too surprising to me. But, you know, the other thing with Waymo that we don't know that could be really expensive for them is how often people are actually intervening in the ride, the remote operators. So they have this one line. They say, oh, you know, the remote operators might help the car as it travels across town. I think that was like in LA, maybe when they announced that, but or maybe San Francisco. Either way, to me, that sounds like if it was infrequent, they would just say it's infrequent. So I have a feeling that it's still frequent-ish. And that can be like very expensive on a per mile basis, depending on how many, you know, labor personnel or cost you're going to add on to it. So, you know, I think it's good for Waymo that they're really dedicating resources to this. And like, hey, let's face it, they have a real platform. I mean, you can ride an autonomous car today, thanks to them. So I think they're, you know, definitely like a company that should be considered here. I just think until we see those contracts get executed in terms of them like porting, you know, thousands, 10,000s cars on the road, I think it looks like it's going to be tougher for them to scale if Tesla is close at all.
Great. Any last takeaways?
Well, a couple of things on the call that, you know, we didn't get to in our newsletter, and I recommend everyone reads our newsletter. You know, we said that we heard about full self-driving on the Semi for the first time. So, you know, we have a number of autonomous truck players. Tesla hadn't really talked about it before, but we had always assumed they were working on it, and this is that confirmation. So I also thought that was another exciting piece of news there that, and, you know, I don't know, what do you think, Sam? Elon, he mentioned flying cars again. I know there's been like a lot of back and forth. Okay, like, will he consider other vehicle types? Seems like he's got enough to focus on today, but what do you think for the future?
Yeah, I think that was mainly a comment with some creative use of rocket booster in the new Roadster. So maybe something along those lines. I mean, I think, you know, launching Robotaxi and Optimus are certainly grand enough achievements for the near to medium term. And I think we even heard it on the call, you know, everyone wants to work on the Roadster because it's probably the craziest, coolest engineering problem out there, but you got to tackle the big market opportunities first. All right. So hopefully in 6 months' time, no longer than 6 months, because it's not end of year yet. So mid 2025, hopefully we'll all do an episode in a Tesla ride hail. All right. Thank you, Tasha, so much.
Thank you.
Nick, Anthropic, AI agents, buzzwords, agentic, everyone talking about it. What did they actually do? Is it meaningful or more incremental?
I think it's indicative of where we're moving to in the future. And just to, you know, give background, Anthropic, which has its models under the name Claude, Claude 3.5 Sonnet, Claude 3.5 Haiku, a number of different models out there, released new updates on both of those models I just mentioned, but then also introduced new capability when it comes to what its models are capable of. And they're labeling that called computer use. And it's a very interesting product that is able to navigate the computer in exactly the same way a human would. So be able to move a mouse, open up applications, browse the web, all potential features and tasks that it could potentially complete in the future. It's still in beta, but I think this is generally what we are hoping to see when we talk about AI agents. I think, Sam, the analogy I would give is, you know, you talk about why humanoid robotics are so important, and it's because you're backfitting hardware for how humans interact with the physical world. And I think of what they're doing here in the same way, right? You're backfitting a model to be able to use a computer in the same way that a human does. And so the one benchmark that they use, it's called OS World, which evaluates AI models' ability to use computers like humans do. Claude 3.5 Sonnet scored 14.9% in the screenshot only category, but that was notably better than the next best AI system, which scored 7.8%. And then when it was able to do or have more steps in its process, it was scoring 22%. So still very much early days. But I think, again, when we talk about agents and being able to prompt to, task completion, where a model has to go out and carry out several different tasks to, in order to complete your one prompt, this is the type of agentic capability all model providers will hopefully go after so that we can have what we've been talking about on the show, which is, you know, that digital assistant in your pocket.
And so you think that this is not Anthropic specific, right? This is the direction that everyone's moving. Is there something unique about what Anthropic is doing relative to everyone else? Or is it, you know, you see with all of these other things, there's various benchmarks. Some people lead in one area versus the other.
I'm sure there is, you know, something unique that they're doing if they're scoring, you know, the highest on this certain benchmark. Obviously, they have pushed the frontier. So they've, you know, probably figured out something that the rest of the model providers haven't. And we haven't seen a lot of these companies go after this specific type of use case yet. I think, you know, Anthropic has models at the frontier of a lot of different benchmarks and capability. So it's, you know, very interesting that they're also first here. Do I think that, you know, their lead persists? To be determined, right? But I think if you were to look at other categories and, you know, how the space for model providers is shaping up and large language models in general, you know, once someone comes out with certain set of capabilities, doesn't take long to see another company try, you know, to go after the same problem in either beat or come near on a performance basis. And this is, you know, the internal raging debate that we have on, you know, almost a daily basis now at Arc, with probably me on the commoditization side and then Brett leading the charge on, you know, the performance side. But, you know, my personal opinion is, you know, this type of performance and largely a lot of the performance capabilities we see from large language models, how defensible that is over the long term on a performance basis only, I find it very hard to believe that, you know, this is defensible. I think you have to look to how other software companies in history have defended capabilities beyond just having better performance. And that typically comes with a data advantage. So a continuous flywheel of performance improvements and then distribution. And I think, you know, you, Sam and I, we were going back and forth on the Mark Andreessen clip from last week, where he, you know, states in a very similar way, you know, this is the fastest technology to democratize that he's ever seen in history, where, you know, you can't pay for better capability that the general public doesn't have for $20 with ChatGPT, Anthropic, you know, these other tools that are out there. So, we'll see how it all shapes up, but I think commoditization is, you know, very likely in a lot of these sectors. Is this one specifically, you know, maybe not.
Got it. And then Nick, I wouldn't want to deprive you of this opportunity to do a little victory lap. What piece of news came out regarding the Vision Pro?
Ah, yes, the Vision Pro. Rumors are circulating, Sam, that the Vision Pro may be discontinued after what has it been, a year on the market, maybe not even. Lessons learned from Apple, you know, don't launch a extremely expensive product in a category that has yet to take off and reach mass market. Or, you know, maybe they have plans to take the technology that was built into the Apple Vision Pro and start a new line that is more affordable. But we'll see. And again, this is just rumors, you know, that Apple Vision Pro could still be on sale 6 months from now. But I think when it comes to how it turned out and just general adoption of the device, even if you don't believe that specific rumor, the other rumors circulating, which have been, you know, mostly verified, are that the sales of the device itself wildly disappointed Apple's own internal projections.
And then what about, I saw this headline, I didn't have time to dig in, but I think there was rumors that the Meta Ray-Bans were some of the best selling Ray-Bans in stores, even in Europe, where it's like most of the capability isn't available.
Yes. I think the article you're referring to was someone on the management of EssilorLuxottica, who Meta is partnered with on the Ray-Bans, the Meta Ray-Ban devices, spoke and stated that the Meta Ray-Bans are currently around 60% of in-store sales in on average in Europe, which is interesting, partly because Europe has much tighter regulations when it comes to AI. So what capability they don't have that we may have in the US, I'm not entirely sure of, but I think just generally having that overhang of AI regulation, you would think that these devices, which are very much marketed as AI enabled glasses, wouldn't sell as well, either because there is currently restrictions or potential future restrictions of the device. But I think if you haven't bought a pair of those yet, you're living in the past. I would say that is, if you were to get excited about one device since smartwatches, it's this pair of glasses, this specific pair of glasses, not Snap and what they're doing, not Apple Vision Pro. It's Meta Ray-Ban smart glasses because of everything that we've talked about in prior shows. But if I had to restate it, it's one, off the top, it is a very functional, nice looking pair of sunglasses or just your normal everyday glasses. Second, it has an absolutely stunning camera for a device that feels quite light. And then third, it has all of the AI features we've talked about in the past, including real-time translation, which is a software upgrade that these devices just got. So
I love how easy it is to tell what
to you're get me going on this
to tell what you're animated about. Nick, what do you? You don't wear them running, do you?
I wore them in a turkey trot I did last year. I wore it for the full race. That was fun. I would say, in terms of its ability to be a performance device for sport, I don't think it's there yet. But for everyday events, or I guess not everyday events, special events, I think these are a must-have. Keep yourself hands-free, live in the moment, have your vantage point replayed back to you. Again, I think I've stated this. I wore them to my wedding. I walked down the aisle with them. I've been tweeting on Threads at Ray-Ban to try and get my video of the wedding, because I think it's probably the first wedding ever captured on a pair of smart glasses. they will not respond to me, so maybe this will get them too.
Yeah, I'm sure
it's my last ditch effort.
All right, thank you everyone for joining. We got a nice little third topic
in wait, we should end with another piece of news, which is Meta, another rumor, they are now potentially going to offer an AI search product, which is quite interesting. Yeah, that just came out. So we'll probably talk about that at length maybe next week. But I think First Take makes a lot of sense. Meta, with its family of apps, has a corner of the internet in terms of the amount of data and what is capable across Instagram, Facebook, and WhatsApp. Opening up that data to a search engine plus what is publicly available across the rest of the internet could be quite powerful, and they have the distribution to make it, a meaningful product right away if, people look for something new, which is, really interesting to think about how search in its maturity is now being kind of reborn because AI makes it much more text rich and less link based.
Well, so it's like, Google, just give us page two instead of all of the ads on page one.
Yeah. I mean, I currently have, I would say, shifted the majority of my search at this point to Perplexity. Mm-hmm. I got the Perplexity Pro free with the Rabbit device that we all bought and that I have not opened yet, but was kind of a precursor to what we just talked about, full circle, precursor to what we talked about with cloud and computer use, because that promised some of the same capability. And I would say Perplexity, just the results you get back for certain types of queries, nothing even comes close. So we'll see how this search race shapes up.
All right. We'll end it there. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you, Sam. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Sorry we were a bit inconsistent. We had some sickness, some work travel, but we're back. We're back in full starting now. We'll take it through the end of the year without missing a week.